This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, we have got a benching in New York. We've got a coaching firing in Pittsburgh. But we're going to start with Monday Night Football because the Eagles went to Kansas City. And I never like using this term when people talk about Super Bowl rematches, when they say they got revenge on the Kansas City Chiefs. Well, unless it was Super Bowl 58, there's no revenge. The Kansas City Chiefs, their last victory against the Eagles was a championship. The Eagles' win last night just moves them to 9-1, and they've really solidified the hold of the NFC. The AFC continues to get really, really messy, but what a wild game this was. What a wild game where if you're watching it for narratives, like I was, where I was trying to find the bigger story. Everything changed all the time throughout the entire game. In the first half, when the Eagles and Chiefs traded some touchdowns in the first quarter, Justin Watson had the touchdown pass, and then DeAndre Swift ran it in from 4 yards out, and we had a 7-7 ball game. And then in the second quarter, when Travis Kelce scored, and then they kicked a field goal late, and you're thinking the Eagles couldn't move the ball at all. And the whole narrative for me in the first half was, look, this is a Chiefs team that we know is struggling in the wide receiving core. There's not the same weapons that there used to be. But this is the best defense that Patrick Mahomes has ever had. Like, his defensive side of the ball is phenomenal. What they were doing to the Eagles, constant three and outs. And my thought was, this is the story. This will be the story of the game. The Chiefs had a 10-point lead. They're at home. You're not going to find a better scenario in the NFL than Kansas City leading at halftime at home. And they're one of the only few teams that really knock it out. I mean, outside of the Cincinnati game in the playoffs, they're usually good closers at home at Arrowhead Stadium. And so that was my thought at halftime, was this is going to be a story about the Chiefs' defense. This is going to be the 5 sacks on Jalen Hurts, all of the pressure, Chris Jones getting to him, everybody on that defensive line getting pressure. That's going to be the story, right? And I'll see in the second half how that plays out, but that's going to be. And then it was completely changed. It was completely changed for 2 reasons. One, the Eagles' defense showed up. The secondary showed up. The other part was, as well, was the fact that the receiving problem that we talked about started to show up as well. There are moments in games where you hear this all the time with athletes. If they fumble a football, if they miss a pass, a quarterback misses a pass, if the offensive line gives up a sack, whatever it is, and it's late, and it could have been the deciding moment. What do we hear from coaches all the time? That cliched sort of line, players say it too, to support their teammates. That wasn't the reason we lost the game. There was 60 minutes of football, plenty of other issues. And most of that's really a true statement, right? I mean, that's really a true statement. But the reality of it is, when we perceive it and see it in real time, we know that this was the moment. And Marquez Valdes-Scantling had the moment. That ball was in his hands. That ball was in his hands on one-to-one man-on-man coverage that he beat his defender, and Patrick Mahomes threw it as perfectly as you could throw the ball, and he dropped it. He dropped it. It would have given the Chiefs the lead with about 2 minutes remaining, and he dropped it. Now, a lot of attention is on that, but let's not forget, too, that in the game, the play that sealed the win for Philadelphia, the 4th and 25, Mahomes once again throws a brilliant pass, and Christian Watson can't bring it down. This was a problem all night for Kansas City. Travis Kelce dropped a pass. Travis Kelce fumbled a football. This was a problem all game in the second. Well, I should say in the second half, more the second half, that affected the Chiefs, and they were held scoreless by the Eagles. I mean, look at the way the Eagles' defense adjusted in this game, right? I mean, look at the Travis Kelce touchdown. Right, it's the simple Travis Kelce play that you know. He gets off the line, he does that turn, and then he's able to catch the ball in the end zone. Kevin Byard couldn't get to the coverage. and Travis Kelce scores. What does Kevin Byard do later in the game? He flips that switch and gets an interception in the end zone of Patrick Mahomes. It was a complete reversal. And now the Eagles at 9-1, they don't have any interest in how the AFC is doing and what this muddled conference is. They are separating themselves from Dallas and San Francisco, and even Detroit for that matter. I mean, it is starting to be a little bit of a separation between, and not just record-wise, just this feeling of where this team is. This is a tough place to play. The weather didn't cooperate. You're down by 10 at halftime, and you found everything that you needed to do in the second half that worked. Now, the Chiefs absolutely helped this, right? With the receivers dropping balls, they certainly helped this. But here's the story of the second half. Marquez Valdez-Scantling dropped the pass, and Devontae Smith did not. The 41-yarder down near the goal line that allowed the brotherly shove to be the go-ahead touchdown, that was the moment in the game. Those are the two different things that happened in this game that allowed the Eagles to win this. Their receiver caught the pass, and the Chiefs' receiver did not catch the pass. And again, the at the beginning of the season, and we talked about how it goes back to that what we talked about yesterday, which was when you looked at the preseason predictions on how this AFC was going to have all of this level of play, all of this quarterback, and the anticipation of Aaron Rodgers coming to the AFC, and in a conference that still had Burrow and Mahomes and Allen and Trevor Lawrence, right? We're seeing a very muddled picture. It's very complex. The Denver Broncos at 5-5 are as into this playoff picture as anyone else that's around, that's 500 or better, right? But the NFC, the elites of that conference are doing exactly what we thought they were going to do. At the beginning of the season, we said, here are the Eagles. They're the best team in the NFL. They're now 9-1. Detroit finished really, really strong last year, barely missed out on the playoffs, but went from 1-6 to 9-8. They are 8-2, right? The San Francisco 49ers are 7-3. Like, all of a sudden, when you look at the standings and you're seeing exactly what you expected to see in the NFC. But when you look at the AFC, it's absolute muddle. It's muddled. The Kansas City Chiefs have the same record as the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Miami Dolphins, and they're all behind the Baltimore Ravens now, who have the best record in the conference. And so, obviously the AFC was going to be more fun if all the quarterbacks were healthy and all the teams that had those quarterbacks were elite. But I think it's going to be even more fun when we get to close to the end of the season to see who's vying for what, right? Maybe the AFC championship game now doesn't run through Kansas City, because right now today it would run through Baltimore. And right now the NFC championship game is running through Philadelphia. So if you're Detroit, if you're Dallas, if you're San Francisco, if you're these teams that are going to want to get Philadelphia, you're going to get them at the link. Right? It wasn't a well-played game. That was the thing about it is that this was not two of the best teams in the NFL really putting on an elite show. It was sloppy. The weather, you know, participated in that. It was rainy, it was wet, it was chilly. Right. And the quarterbacks, you know, weren't really on point for a lot of the games. But when they were on point, it was amazing who did what for their quarterback. I mean, Jalen Hurts, they had four receivers on the Smith kit. They went with a four receiver set, and Hurts throws the ball almost immediately. If you watch the tape, he throws it almost immediately, knowing that the one-on-one coverage benefits Devontae Smith, and that if he can get to that point, he'll catch the football. And the same thing in on the flip side with Patrick Mahomes was that the Eagles, again, sent man-man coverage on Marquez Valdez-Scantling, who he beats, and Mahomes waits, sees it, throws a perfect pass, and it's not caught. It comes down to those. So every time, you know, whether it was Andy Reid or Patrick Mahomes or, you know, anybody else that was sticking up for this, saying things like, yeah, Mahomes was talking about his turnover. Like, they were all talking about little things that they did wrong, right? Travis Kelce dropped a pass. Everyone, there were other receivers who dropped passes. but it's not going to be as big as when the game is on the line and 2 minutes are remaining and you are open and you are near the goal line and it is put in your hands and you don't catch it. Right? We pay quarterbacks a lot of money, right, to do a lot of things. Quarterbacks have to read defenses. Quarterbacks have to know the coverage and make decisions and audible and everything like that. Receivers are paid to basically do two things. And one, they can't help because it's part of their being, which is be fast. Right? But the other thing is to catch the football. That's it. You get paid to catch footballs. And the ball was in his hands and he dropped it. And I get it because, and you saw his frustration at the end of the game and you completely understand. Right? It was like, again, like if your whole existence is to do one thing and you fail to do one thing, it's very hard to get to come to grips with that. Right? There is no other thing you're supposed to do. You're not expected to block punts. You're not expected to, you know, defend against a rushing linebacker. That's not your job. Your job is to get open and catch passes when they are thrown and hit your hands. And Christian Watson is not going to feel as bad as Marquez Valdes-Scantling, but he should. He should. Because that was as good of a pass as you're going to throw on 4th and 25. Crazy game. But it was a great game for Philadelphia to rally from 10 points down, to shut Kansas City out on the road, to shut Kansas City out at Arrowhead in the second half. The defense showed up. Devontae Smith showed up. The brotherly shove showed up. And the Eagles are now 9-1. We'll get more all the other NFL news coming up as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio, including a coaching firing in Pittsburgh. That's next on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Your thoughts on Monday Night Football last night. Again, like I said, I didn't think it was a well played game or anything. I thought it, but I was riveted. I was
shocked at the outcome. Yeah, I really did think
the Chiefs would win.
Yeah, with that much time left and what we've seen Mahomes do in the past, I thought it was like, you know, I've seen this story too many times.
Yeah, same thing. It's outside of the Cincinnati game, the Cincinnati playoff game in which they had a big lead at halftime and Cincinnati blew them out in the second half to win that game in overtime. They are good at closing out at home. Like they are really good at closing out at home. Now the Lions beat them earlier at Arrowhead, but Chris Jones didn't play. Travis Kelce didn't play.
So that game
that's
doesn't
sort of an
count.
Outlier. That doesn't really count. But when you feel like, okay, when they scored with about 6 minutes left, I'm thinking it's, you know, there's this way too much time. So, on this clock.
So what do we say about the Eagles then? I mean, this is a team. I mean, none of their wins, they're 9-1. None of them have looked pretty.
Yeah. I look at it this way though. In all you need to do in the NFL is just win enough so you don't have to go on the road in the playoffs. And if you don't have to go on the road in the playoffs, that's half the battle. So they may not look pretty, but they are, if San Francisco's looking better or Detroit's looking better, if the Eagles keep finding ways to win games, they're going to be hosting those games in the NFC. They're going to have the bye week and they're going to have a home field. And that's going to be a big deal in the postseason. But what I liked about it was how the defense, that secondary that was world-class secondary that we were waiting to see if it would show up, showed up in the second half. But at the same time, this wasn't about shutting down Patrick Mahomes in as much as it was about the drops. The drops were really the story of the second half. Yes, the Eagles were able to do, you know, create confusing coverages that caused some missed passes. But this story is about the Chiefs really failing in the fourth quarter on their two receivers that failed them in those two opportunities. I mean, what if Christian Watson comes down with a 4th and 25? What are you kidding me? Like, and Patrick Mahomes threw a beautiful pass, an absolutely beautiful pass. I mean, that's a dime, man. And Christian Watson can't pull it down. And again, as I talked about earlier, the Valdes-Scantling catch, he gets one-on-one coverage and beats it. And Mahomes puts it in his chest and he can't pull it down. That's the way I see it. But I mean, again, I hate the idea. Like when people talk about revenge games, it's not a revenge game, people. Like, there's nothing, there's no value that comes out of it other than a win in the win column.
Yeah, I mean, guaranteed every single one of those Eagles players would have rather have lost tonight if it meant that they won the Super Bowl.
I had to do this with my Denver friends years ago where there was a playoff game. Denver had a playoff game at home against Joe Flacco and the Ravens. And they lost that game in overtime. You remember they had blown coverage and Flacco hit a guy for a late touchdown. And then it went into overtime and the Ravens ended up winning in overtime. And it was a freezing cold night. And it ruined a great season for Peyton Manning and the Broncos. I think it was his first year in Denver. I want to say it was his first year. And that ended up sending the Ravens to the Super Bowl because they ended up beating, they beat New England the next week. They went on to the Super Bowl. But then the next year, the NFL opened the season with Broncos and Ravens. And there was all this revenge talk. And the local cartoonist or the paper drew a bunch of Avengers and said, the Revengers, that they looked like Broncos. And I was like, do you think this is equal? Like, do you think this game is the first game out of the season is equal to a divisional playoff game that you lost at home? Like, if that's how you measure it, God bless you. If you feel like you feel better about losing that game because you won week one, great. If you're the Eagles, you don't feel like you won the Super Bowl by beating Kansas City at Kansas City. The Eagles could have lost that game last night and still have had home field advantage through the playoffs. Right? Like, they still could have managed to get the number one seed in the NFC, even losing last night. Right? Like, there's still a lot of football left to be played here. So it's not a revenge for the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is a Super Bowl. Like, we got to stop talking like that. But I think that it is too bad. And I'm going to preface with this. I think it's fun to have a storyline like this where you say, boy, these receivers, man, why are they dropping passes? But I think it's too bad that a game between two teams that not only played in last year's Super Bowl, but represented the two best teams in the NFL, came down to a storyline of receivers dropping footballs. Like, it wasn't a mano-a-mano offensive game, right? Like, Hurts didn't respond, and you know, it looked like that early, right? Kansas City scored, Philadelphia scored, and it was 7-7, and it looked like it could be that way. But this was really about Kansas City going up by 10 and Philadelphia shutting them out in the second half and winning this one. And that's my biggest takeaway out of it is just that. So I don't think it was a well-played game. It was entertaining because it really, you did not know what was coming and what was happening. I mean, Travis Kelce's fumbling a football. Like, what are we doing here? Right. It's not supposed to happen. And again, receivers all over Kansas City kept dropping passes. There is a breaking news this morning. The Pittsburgh Steelers have fired offensive coordinator Matt Canada. The Steelers' offense will now be a two-team effort. It'll be quarterbacks coach Mike Sullivan and running backs coach Eddie Faulkner will be taking over the play-calling duties on offense. The Steelers do not do this. This is so historic. The last time the Steelers fired a coach in midseason, any coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, head coach, anybody, 1941. 1941 was the last time they've done this. There are teams that have done it like five times in the last 10 years. Right?
There's been teams that have done it five times this year.
Yeah, no. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy that they are that loyal to the people they hire.
If
you get hired by the Steelers, I mean, you have to be absolutely abysmal to get fired from your job.
I mean, how do you feel if you're a mech?
You know? I mean, see, what a unbelievable badge to wear. The first Steelers coach to be fired in midseason since 1941. I mean, that's nuts. But they needed it. They were losing the locker room. They're 6-4. They were 6-4, and they're the worst 6-4 team you'll find. And now they need a spark on offense. And Najee Harris like was really adamant about this, about how he was really upset. You could tell in his voice. You could tell in the way that he was hinting that Matt Canada should have been gone. Players have been hinting that. You have former players that are like speaking now openly about the team, talking about how horrible it is. Ben Roethlisberger has been open about it. Kynes Ward has been open about it. You got other older Steelers very upset with the way the Steelers offense is. And now Matt Canada pays the price for it. Now, there's also been a benching, as Zach Wilson has done in New York. They will go with Tim Boyle, the starting quarterback for the Jets. And then Trevor Siemian, who's on the practice squad, has been moved up to QB2. So Zach Wilson is QB3, don't even bother dressing.
And see, that's the only part that bothers me. I get, you know, replacing Zach Wilson. But, I mean, you demote him all the way to, like, he was your starter. You bragged, or you, you know, went on and on about, no, he's our man, he's our man, he's our man. And then all of a sudden it's like, nah, okay, we're making a decision. Not only are you not QB2, or you're not QB1, but you're not even QB2.
Yeah, I've said this many times. The hubris of the Jets cost them this season. And I don't know if this came from the top down. I don't know if this came from upper management down to Robert Saleh that said, look, we were the ones that took him, what, number two overall in the draft or three overall in the draft?
He was number two.
Number two. We took him number two overall. We want to showcase this. We do not want to give up on this. Like, it's fine to say you're struggling young. We've brought in Aaron Rodgers. Like, why wouldn't we bring in Aaron Rodgers?
Right.
And then you can become a quarterback after. Like, you grow under Rodgers, and then we still have this relationship. Then when Rodgers went down and they just sold as much as they possibly could publicly, Zach Wilson, I said at the time, that's the right call if you don't have any other options. The problem was they didn't even want to pursue other options. They just went with it. And by going with it, when he started to play well, they looked like geniuses. But that didn't last very long because even in the games in which they won, he wasn't popping. They still were struggling offensively. They were just finding ways to win games. And then he started to regress. And when he regressed, it was too late. Because now what are they, 4-6?
Yeah.
4-6. And Tim Boyle and Trevor Siemian aren't exactly going to give you a 7-game win streak to close out the season. So they couldn't even keep the ship afloat in an AFC where 5-5 puts you just as much in the playoff picture as if you're 6-4. But they're 4-6 now. So the benching of Zach Wilson, terrible. We'll continue on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Big weekend in college football. We're going to get to that coming up, and we'll talk more about Monday night's game. And are the Chiefs not looking chiefy? That's coming up as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so the Steelers fired Matt Canada. I'm thrilled, man. I'm thrilled. I don't like guys getting fired before the holidays, but holy mackerel. Hope we got a nice severance package.
You know what? I'm just happy that news came out before the show started.
Yeah.
Although it would have been nice if it happened while we were on air at the same time to get that instant gut reaction. Because all I pictured, once I saw it pop up, all I pictured is, you know, you just ran through the house screaming and neighbors are calling like something's going on over there.
It's funny with it being a Steeler fan, though, because you don't anticipate these kind of things.
No.
It's like we need a change. And the Steelers go, you know what? I agree. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to wait 3 years and then we'll evaluate it again and we'll maybe make a decision in March of 2027. Is that good? And you go, oh, well, that won't help us now. And like, I know, but it seems like the right thing to do. Like, why don't we wait 3 years to see if this plays out? No, but we need to change now. I get it. I hear what you're saying. But maybe 3 years from now, we should figure this out. That's how they do it. And so you don't anticipate that this will ever happen. When people talk, like, you see, if you're part of a fan message board thing, this is the one thing people have to remind other Steeler fans of. Like, they need to fire Matt Canada. They never fire coaches midway through the season. Like, this is wishful thinking. This is not going to happen. This is like saying Christmas should be in October. Like, well, let's try to change it. No, it's not. It's going to be December 25th. You're like, oh, I want it in October. But you're never going to get it in October. It's the same thing. And then you wake up today and you find out and you're like, okay, who's doing what over there now? Like, how is it that Matt, like, basically Matt Canada is leaving the Steelers offices saying, what I did to this team was the worst of anybody that's ever been fired in the offseason because they decided to fire me 10 games into it.
10 games into it, they decided to let me go. Good. It's about time. That funny stat about being outgained by everybody. Everybody outgained the Steelers this year. Everybody. It's crazy. And I'm glad they made the move. But back to the Jets real quick. So, again, I'm with you. I agree. Like, it feels like it was Zach Wilson was put into this position of he had the support of the team, then he lost the support of the team, then he gained it again. Remember, like, he's been on this incredible roller coaster from going out in week one, trotting out with the offense after Aaron Rodgers going down, knowing that nobody wanted to see him do this. Not anybody in America, maybe only Bills fans. Nobody wanted to see this. Everyone was tuning in to the first Monday Night Football game of the year to see Aaron Rodgers play for the Jets. Hard Knocks, all of that offseason drama. That's what he was. So here comes Zach Wilson and knows nobody wants me to be doing this. But I got a job to do. Let's go do it. He doesn't play particularly well, but he doesn't play bad. It really ends up being a back-and-forth affair that's won on a punt return. But the Jets are 1-0. Yay! Robert Saleh gets to the podium. Zach Wilson's our starting quarterback. We believe in Zach. Well, nobody believed in him enough to not pursue Aaron Rodgers this offseason, right? Not to welcome in Derek Carr in free agency. Let's not forget they did that. Like, it's one thing to say, hey, we have a chance to get Aaron Rodgers. Let's go get Aaron Rodgers. They welcomed in Derek Carr. Like, they had him show up to the facility. They were willing to say publicly that Derek Carr could lead them to a Super Bowl. So what they were doing was this summer, it wasn't just pursuing the best quarterback that happened to be available, and they're hardly ever available, and just being like, well, it's a unique circumstance that we got to do what's best for the franchise. They were actively trying to find Zach Wilson's replacement. That's them. That's not on the fan base. And then what did they do as soon as they went down? The fan base was like, we don't believe in Zach Wilson. And the Jets were like, well, how dare you? Because we do. You do? You tried to replace him in this offseason with somebody other than Rodgers. You were thinking about that. So forgive us. We're just following your lead here. And then when it wasn't working, they just kept doubling down. Are you going to get another quarterback? Are you going to find a veteran? Nope. And as we said, I get financially, they were strapped. Aaron Rodgers had to manipulate his contract so they could afford Dalvin Cook, which was a waste of time. But nevertheless, they didn't do something. But then the wins started coming. They won three in a row. Oh, okay, we were right this whole time. Look, you guys, we believed in them. And then as soon as it goes back down again, it's, all right, he's done. I mean, it's what a roller coaster. But is anybody holding them accountable for this? Like, is anybody saying, you know what? The reason the Jets are 4-6 is not because Zach Wilson played terrible. It's because you kept him. Because when the chips were down early in the season and you had a chance to go sign somebody or had a chance to go find somebody, anybody other than him that could put the ball in the end zone, you didn't go out and do that. So stop pretending like we knew this the whole time. That's not how this looks. You sold us, and then you sold him. And now Tim Boyle, the trust of the franchise, any slimmer of hope that the team can win enough games to be in the playoff picture and Rodgers could return in some magical week 17 game just before the end of the season, I just don't see it. And I'm not saying it would have been different if, I don't know, Joe Flacco was signed or whoever it was out there that was floating around, names that were floating around. I don't know. And I don't know if they, you know, thought about asking Arizona about Josh Dobbs. I think at the time that Josh Dobbs was available near the trade deadline, it was probably already sold that they weren't going to be doing that. Right? So I don't know. But I'm with you. I feel like the whole thing, the whole trajectory of Zach Wilson had been this wild roller coaster of not just play. Like, the play on the field didn't define it. It was because the play on the field wasn't really, it never was spectacular. Like, he never had a game. He had a good game against Kansas City, but he didn't put up like four touchdowns and threw for like 350 or something.
No, he's
but he had a good enough game that made you go, okay, we got something here.
Yeah. And I really feel like it's just been like the last 2 weeks have been horrific. Right?
Yeah,
I mean, like especially horrific. I mean, he's probably bad throughout the season, but last 2 weeks have been especially horrific. And, you know, that was probably, I'm surprised they didn't do this sooner.
They should have. They should. When it started to fall apart.
Yeah.
Like when they lost to the Chargers, they probably should have started realizing. Yeah, that's the thing. It's pride. That's what I was saying earlier.
Yeah.
I think if you draft a kid number two overall, you want to prove that you're not dumb. Like you evaluated this guy, right? Like you evaluated this guy, and he was supposed to be the franchise quarterback. You picked him, excited about him, paid him a lot of first round number two overall pick money. And he's been an absolute failure, a bust, a complete bust. You've given every opportunity, given him everything you could want. He has offensive weapons. He has a defense that will get you back on the field quickly. And he still can't do a thing. Still can't throw touchdowns. Still can't lead his team. And all that stuff where he does, where he flicks the ball with his wrist and it goes 50 yards, that's great. But that's not what this league is about. This league is about being able to read defenses, read coverages, throw it tight in the windows perfectly on pace with your receivers. And he doesn't do that at all. They're 30th in the NFL in passing yards. That's what a couple of years into the number two overall pick, and that's what you are. All right. I mean, seriously. I mean, this was just a couple of years ago that he was the second pick overall, 2021. So this is his third season, and they're near the bottom of the league in passing yards with Garrett Wilson as one of your wide receivers. And that's inexcusable. That's inexcusable on a million levels. That is a complete bust. This is not a guy that is last in the NFL in passing or near last in NFL in passing because he's been dealing with a busted thumb or a busted hand that you just have to survive. Oh, it's limited, but he's still good enough to go. No, he's healthy and he stinks throwing the football in this league. And if you're the group that evaluated him and picked him, if you're the group that you're going to want to not act like we, oh yes, dumb us. What were we drinking? Seriously. But this statement now that Tim Boyle is going to be the quarterback is a statement that the organization is now saying, you guys were right all along. He can't play in this league. He tried, but he can't. He can't play in this league. And that's it.
So, I mean, what do they do now?
I
know he's not playing. He's a third string quarterback, right? The only way he's going to get in, which would surprise me if both old what's his name? I'm already forgetting the guy who's going to be the starter.
Tim Boyle.
Thank you. And Trevor Siemian. If they get injured, then obviously he's the next man up. But are you keeping him next year? Like what?
I don't know. Obviously Rodgers is your quarterback, and then you
right.
find another backup.
I mean, but I mean, if Tim Boyle plays well, Luke's gone.
Maybe that's the case. I mean, this offseason you'll have a lot more options to figure what your backup quarterback situation is going to be.
Well, but I'm saying, like, for him, he's not tradable, right?
You just let him go.
Yeah.
If you don't want him on the team, you just cut him.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, week 11 in the books of the National Football League. We're heading into week 12 now. It starts Thursday. Short week, kids. Three games on Thursday.
But like we were saying yesterday, it really feels like it started last night.
I know. I thought it was concluding week 11.
No, I know, but I'm saying...
I'm used to that.
Saying the good football week began.
Yeah. So Thursday...
Monday night's the conclusion.
Yeah, right. Thursday, we got the three games on tap. You got Detroit, Green Bay. You got Cowboys, Washington. And then Seattle and San Francisco.
Good games.
And then if you are a college football fan, there is one top 25 game on Thanksgiving, and that's the Egg Bowl between Ole Miss and Mississippi State. So
it's all rivalries this week.
All rivalries. Big-time rivalries. For example, like Wisconsin and Minnesota. they play for the Paul Bunyan Axe.
I love that one.
I love that one. You've got the there's a newer one. It's the border war between Missouri and Arkansas, but this was one of those weird. It's a weird rivalry in its history. They've not played a lot, but like the first meeting was like in 1906 or something like that, and then it was like then they played again in like the 20s, and then they played again in like the 40s. But it wasn't until Missouri joined the SEC that they went, hey, you know what? Why don't we put together some game?
We should make like, this a real thing.
Yeah, like let's make this a thing. Like in 2014, so it's a relatively new rivalry, but it's the border war.
Would you consider Penn State versus Michigan State kind of like the leftover?
Yeah, that's like the turkey sandwich.
Yeah.
of college football rivalry.
I don't even know if it's a turkey sandwich, to be honest with you.
Is it just warmed over mashed potatoes?
Yeah, maybe it's just mashed potatoes. It's like reheated mashed potatoes because
and the
there's
green
really
bean casserole.
There's really no point. It's just the fact that they probably went through all the other rivalries and were like, well, we got these two teams left.
Why don't we do that? Yeah. I've always said that if you have a rivalry. So your school, right? Your school A, your state U.
Yeah.
And you have a rivalry against state UB or whatever it is. But they are like, yeah, but I'm glad you think this is a thing, but our thing is over here. Like, that's not a real rivalry. So if you look at Michigan State and you go, well, who's your rival? And they go, well, Michigan.
Right.
And you go to Michigan and who's your rival? And they go, Ohio State. You go, well, this is not a love triangle here. Like, this is one team thinking you have a relationship that's deeper than your relationship with another school.
Because Ohio State will never say, oh, it's Michigan State.
Yeah, they're not going to say it's Penn State or anybody else. And so that's when it kind of stinks. Colorado had this problem for years when I was out there. I'd ask everybody, like, so who's the rival? I go, Nebraska. They're like, yeah, but Nebraska doesn't look at you the same way, right? Like, it doesn't – like, Nebraska looked at Oklahoma back in the day as their big rival.
Yep.
And so then it was Colorado State. Who's your rival? And you're like, well, it's Colorado. And you're like, yeah, but Colorado thinks it's Nebraska. So what are we all doing here?
And did Oklahoma – would Oklahoma look at their rival as being Oklahoma State or Texas?
Yeah, I think it's Oklahoma State. I think it's Texas. I think Oklahoma State looks at Bedlam, but I think it's Texas. Yeah, I'm with you. I think that would be Texas. But the Oklahoma State Oklahoma game is a big deal. It's a huge deal. It's not big enough for Oklahoma to want to continue to do it.
Of course,
right when they go to the SEC.
Well, I mean, that's,
you know,
hey, we're getting one of those this weekend, aren't we? It's the final Civil War. The Civil War has ended.
Yeah,
Saturday.
Exactly. Now I heard the Apple Cup
or Friday,
Washington and Washington State, that they're keeping that together as best they can. Like they've agreed to continue to do it, even if Washington jets to somewhere else and Washington State's left without a conference, that they're still going to play that one. But like South Carolina, when I went to South Carolina, South Carolina was an independent, and then later, a couple of years later, they joined the SEC. But they never wanted anybody other than Clemson. There's no other game other than Clemson. There's no other, like, well, we'll have one with Georgia. No, it's always Clemson. And I don't understand why it has to be this way or not. Like, why South Carolina knows Clemson. Like, they knew in the 90s when they went to the SEC that Clemson could be good. They had the resources. They could be very good, national championship level good, yet they were never going to sway away from the game. Florida has this problem all the time. They play one of the toughest schedules you'll find in college football. And oh, by the way, they add Florida State at the end of it. And Florida State, like this year, could be a national power. Right? Why is it that Oklahoma can't go? I know we play eight teams in the SEC, but why can't we schedule a game against Oklahoma State?
Every year.
Why can't we continue Bedlam?
Yeah.
Why can't we do that?
Well,
because we're not in the same conference, it doesn't matter. It doesn't affect other schools. Georgia and Georgia Tech aren't in the same conference.
I'm not sure what it was called. Maybe you know, but I mean, it's the same thing. Like, why didn't, you know, Texas and Texas A&M keep their thing going?
Right, exactly. Same thing.
I don't know. Was there a name for it?
No, I don't know what that game was called. That's a good one. The Governor's Cup between Kentucky and Louisville, they're in two different conferences. Kentucky's playing a team in Louisville that's ranked 10th in the country. Like, you can do this. It doesn't have to be within your conference. Look, if Auburn, for whatever reason, it would never happen, but if Auburn, for whatever reason, just picked up and moved to the Big 12, Alabama would still play them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They wouldn't go, oh, yeah, we'll have to rethink this. No, they'd say, of course we play you. You know, the fact that it's within the conference confines of the schedule is great, but of course we want to play you. Right? So you look like this is where, I mean, this is the fun part of college football. Like, these rivalry games are so great. I mean, this is when you start hearing stories about old games and moments of in rivalry games that mattered the most and how it affected people. And it really does. There are pockets of the country where it is 365. This is it. This is the only thing I get bragging rights with my office for a year.
And let's face it. I mean, these are the ones that we remember the most as well as fans, as spectators. True. I mean, you know, who can ever forget Auburn, Alabama?
Yeah. I mean, kick six.
Yeah.
Chris Davis.
You know, these are also the games, like, you know, we got the Paul Bunyan Bowl. We got the Civil War, the Apple Cup. I mean, they all have fun nicknames. By the way, Texas A&M, I guess it's called the Lone Star Showdown. That's
boring.
Dumb.
That's stupid. You could have done a better job than that. That you absolutely could have done a better job than that.
It's a terrible name.
Why don't they play for something really awesome? I like the Paul Bunyan axe. Awesome.
I mean, the Egg Bowl. I mean, it sounds stupid, but what a great tradition.
Yeah.
You know, so you've an egg.
It's an egg. A nice egg trophy. Yeah. This is a great weekend. But
are on Friday, which is fantastic.
Yeah. And the Michigan-Ohio State game. And it doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it's great. When you get a rivalry game that people are going to be tuning to anyway because it's history, even if you're not part of it. But to get this where it's two undefeated teams at 11-0, Michigan has won the last two games of this series, number two and number three. The winner gets a chance to play for the Big Ten and a chance to go to the playoff. And the loser does not. The loser of this game is done for the regular season. And that's done. Don't get to add any more to their resume. They are done. They're going to sit on the outside and wait if the one loss will be good enough. And it's not ever been good enough. I hate it, but it really hasn't been. I think only Alabama has been able to get into this playoff without playing in the conference championship.
Yeah.
I think. If I'm not mistaken.
Are either of these teams good enough this year?
Either one?
To be a one-loss team. Say Florida State loses.
Florida State loses? Florida State's out.
No. I'm not talking about Florida. Florida State loses.
Right.
Right? Does that open the door for a one-loss Ohio State-Michigan?
That's going to be the big debate. That's going to be the big... Depending on how this game is played out. It depends on how this game plays itself out. And I'm telling you... the problem is that the conference championship games, it's like the committee has said, we want to reward you for playing an extra game. Like, it is unfair that the loser of this game has one loss and doesn't have to play, right? Like if Ohio State beats Michigan and they get upset by Iowa, that's less than Michigan losing one game to Ohio State and not playing. Like, that's how devastating conference championship games can be. You could find yourself losing and going, the extra game killed us. Like, how would you sell it to Georgia, right? If Georgia loses to Alabama and their one loss is to Alabama in Atlanta on the 13th game of the season, how would you sell it that Michigan at 11-1 would vault over them? Like, you couldn't sell it. So it's a very, very difficult question because it was unfortunate it happened to Michigan before. When they lost, and I don't know who's going to win this game. Michigan's going to be at home. But it happened to Michigan one time before. They lost an amazing game to Ohio State in 2006. An amazing game. And Lloyd Carr didn't promote his school. And Urban Meyer did. And in the end of the day, Urban Meyer got to play Ohio State for the national championship, and Michigan was looking to see if they could get that rematch, and they couldn't get that rematch. It's really wild.